Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I was going to put this out tomorrow as part of the regular Arsecast on Friday, but I reckon, given the way games are going and just how fast we're moving from result to result, from fixture to fixture, it probably makes a bit more sense to put it out this morning. So we will have another regular Arsecast tomorrow. And this is not an Arsecast extra. This is just an extra Arsecast. And joining me to talk about the 1-1 draw with Southampton is James. Hello, James.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right. I just want to put this in context for people because this isn't an Arsecast extra, but I texted you before the game on Wednesday. I said, look, I know it's a big if, but if we win, let's do a little bit of a conversation so we can talk about something that isn't so downtrodden and downbeat and miserable and everything else. Now, I recognize we didn't win, but the very act of not losing feels somehow like we should celebrate it, given what's happened in the last couple of weeks.
Draws are the new wins, if you didn't hear.
That's a Netflix series, is it?
Now, listen, yeah, the rot, I guess, has been slowed. If not quite stopped, slowed.
Temporarily, yeah.
Staved off.
Staved off, that's a great way of putting it. So we're going to talk about the game, we're going to talk about the 1-1. There were changes. We knew there were going to be some changes because of the suspensions to Granit Xhaka, because of the suspension for Hector Bellerin. So Dani Ceballos, as we thought, came in for Granit Xhaka, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles in for Hector Bellerin on the right-hand side. Then Pepe replaced Willian, the first time that Willian has not started a game since he arrived at the club back in August, a Premier League game. And Eddie Nketiah started up front in place of Alexandre Lacazette with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang on the left. And we lined up in a kind of 5-2-3 formation from the start. There was a very good shot of that, wasn't there? The very start of the game, all the players lined up on the pitch. Five, the two, and then the three further forward. So what did you make of the changes that he made? I mean, obviously happy enough to see him try something.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, half of them were enforced, so we knew there were going to be some changes. But I think Nketiah and particularly Pepe coming in was interesting and a bit different. And I guess, you know, we reverted, I think, in some ways to some of the similar things we were doing before, which wasn't a huge surprise. I think Nketiah starting was a bit of a surprise, but I think given that he's the club's top goal scorer in all competitions, there was a sort of logic to it. So I was sort of optimistic about the team lineup, but I guess what I didn't really take into account is that it feels a bit like whoever we put out there, we're sort of bereft of confidence. And I thought that was kind of the story of our first half performance, really.
Yeah, look, I think we can all understand it. There's no reason why this team should feel confident or be confident or play in any fluid, exciting way. But it was so, so obvious last night. Southampton, I was watching them at times, and I was thinking, this must have been what it was like when we played really well, and other teams would have the ball for a few seconds and then they couldn't really maintain possession. It would always come back to us and we put the pressure on, and that's kind of the way Southampton played. And one of the things that occurred to me, I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this in the first half in particular, is when an Arsenal player has the ball, he seems to always be surrounded by a vast amount of opposition players. Like, I look at the, I look at the pitch and go, have they got like 15 players or something? Because none of our players can ever find space, or they receive the ball in a wide area, and all of a sudden, all the angles are cut off. And I realize a lot of that has got to do with perhaps the lack of movement. You know, we talk about not being progressive enough, but when you don't have anyone to progress the ball to, it's very difficult. So is that a consequence, do you think, of the lack of confidence and being maybe a bit risk averse in that players are not moving enough because they don't want to be caught out of position, so we don't get pulled apart, so we don't, you know, concede a goal like we conceded to Theo Walcott?
Yeah, I think that is a factor. I mean, Southampton have a pretty good press as well, from what I could tell, and they're pretty hungry when they're chasing down the ball, and they're a team that are full of confidence and snapping into you at every opportunity. But I think you're right. I think there is a kind of synaptic thing where, you know, players are less confident they're going to receive the ball, so their movement drops off a little bit, which means they're in less space. And there's a kind of constant knock-on effect of this feeling of, you know, when Arsenal players receive the ball, it tends to be in situations where there aren't a huge amount of avenues open to them. And that was definitely sort of my interpretation. But I mean, the first half just felt like we didn't have the ball for very long either, you know. The possession stats were heavily weighted in their favour, kind of every time I watched the game on Amazon, and every time they went back to it, it was kind of scary numbers of, wow, we just, it was sort of like, can we have our ball back stuff?
How do we rationalise that? How do we look at a team that not too long ago was pretty comfortable in possession? I'm not saying we were a high possession team, but, you know, there are examples and clips going around of the way we used to play the ball out from the back against teams who, like Man City, for example. If you talk about Southampton having a good press, there's a hell of a press that you have to contend with. And all of a sudden, you know, we were able to deal with their press and play the ball out, and we looked comfortable, and we moved the ball from back to front. We scored a few goals playing that way, as we all know. So what's happened? It can't just be soft factors, can it? Like confidence, or do we underestimate perhaps how much that can impact a team and the way that it plays? Aubameyang was interesting afterwards, where he said, we're nervous, and being nervous is making us do bad things, which I think is, how can you argue with that? Because we keep doing bad things.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was some quotes from Bernd Leno after the game that I thought were pretty strong, pretty fascinating. Maybe we'll touch on a little bit later. But I think confidence is definitely a huge factor. I mean, Arsenal have been a team that have been relatively comfortable in possession, but generally that possession has been in their own half. You know, we're a team who, when we've been good under Arteta, or better under Arteta, have been very comfortable knocking the ball round at the back. And I think this was another game where our weddedness to that strategy was in question. You know, I think Leno went longer, more than he typically does. And again, it felt like a little bit of a case where against Leeds, we sort of didn't fancy it playing out from the back. And I felt like we didn't really fancy it against Southampton either. And maybe that explains why we didn't hold on to the ball so well.
Let's talk about their goal then. I think Gabriel has been excellent for us, and let's just make it clear that if there's criticism of him, or if there's people think we're being negative, or I'm being negative, it's only based on this game. It's not to say that he's been a bad signing or anything like it, but it just felt to me from the start like he was having a bit of a night, one of those nights where maybe it wasn't going to go for him. There were some misplaced passes. There was an incident early on where he was protecting the ball, but he put his arm out. And I have to say, my heart was in my mouth a little bit, because, you know, in real time, things like that don't look too bad. But when you look at it via VAR, for example, and then they're slowing it down and they show the motion of the arm coming and where does it hit the guy and of those things, I was just, oh, this could be bad. And thankfully, you know, nothing happened. But it was just one of those where I just wondered if, you know, as a 22-year-old centre half, as, you know, somebody who has been really good for us and really good for a team which, has struggled defensively, if perhaps he was feeling the pressure of that, the responsibility of that, you know, knowing how important it is that he plays well and how, you know, being proactive and being aggressive in his defending would be important for us on the night. And, you know, if you get those things right, and you're talking split seconds here, you know, if you get those things right and you play on the front foot, defend on the front foot, it looks brilliant. But it doesn't take much for it to go the other way.
I think that's it. I mean, for me, the story of his night is kind of, or the theme rather, is one of impetuousness. I think that he was playing like a guy who, you know, wanted to make the difference. And maybe that's been generous because I'm sort of, you know, well-intentioned towards him, but I don't think so. I think this was a young, still relatively inexperienced defender, basically overcommitting on a couple of occasions.
Yeah.
You know, one which causes a Southampton goal and the other which leads to his sending off. I do have a lot of sympathy with him because he's played very well in a team that's struggling. I also think that, you know, when you are the kind of central centre-half in that back three, often you are the person who kind of is holding or pivoting a centre-forward. And Shea Adams and Gabriel were in a tussle all night long. And I almost felt like he got sucked into it, you know, that he was kind of, he was probably relishing, I think, the physical contact and that side of it. And I think it just meant that he got attracted, and both him and Elneny got attracted on that Walcott goal. And from then on, I mean, I've never been so sure in my life that Theo Walcott would score a chance. You know, how many times have you seen him go through there? I mean, in an Arsenal shirt, you probably always had that doubt in your mind of, well, this could go in the bottom corner or it could go well wide. But in a Southampton shirt, I mean, there was just no question whatsoever, was there?
No, I knew he was going to score. I mean, I was exactly the same as you. Like, had he been going through in red and white, I could conjure up a million ways in which he might put that ball. Like, I think one of the last, maybe one of his last chances, I don't know if it was one of his last chances, but in a very similar situation, he tried that kind of finish and just dinked it, like, well wide of the post. I remember that one. This time he just put it beyond Bernd Leno. I don't know if the keeper could be bigger.
It looks weird, but I don't think you can have too many arguments, but it does look weird because Leno, it sort of goes, his head sort of disappears slightly.
Yeah.
He looks down. It is weird.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it again here and he kind of ducks.
Yeah.
He actually kind of ducks. There's a moment where he kind of ducks. And look, we don't need to have the discussion of, you know, the other goalkeeper we used to have. No, the other goalkeeper we used to have who, you know, made himself big like a big Argentinian starfish.
Right, that guy.
You know, that guy. Yeah, but but look, you know, when a player is sent through one-on-one, you know, you've got to look at at what came before much more than you look at the goalkeeper, I think.
Yeah, and maybe Walcott sort of faints for a low shot and Leno buys it. I don't blame the goalkeeper, but I did tweet saying, you know, if he had a head, he would have saved it. It does sort of disappear into his shoulders. But yeah, the other thing to say about that is just that Walcott, for Southampton recently, has been playing quite a lot on the left. And I found it interesting he went over onto that side. I sort of thought, you know, Maitland-Niles against Walcott, if Maitland-Niles hangs back a bit, that could be quite a good matchup for us. And he went over the other side. And I love Kieran. On the subject of defenders we really like, I love Kieran Tierney. But a couple of times against very, very fast people, he has looked a little short. And, you know, I don't blame him for not catching Walcott, but I think Walcott looked to get down that channel.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was clever movement, experience movement. So, look, 1-0 to Southampton, not the start that we wanted. And I think if confidence was in short supply after or before the goal, it certainly was afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it kind of was what everyone was dreading. It gave Southampton, gave them a lot of confidence. They were able to come out and play, and Arsenal wilted. And there were some moments in the end of that first half that, you know, as a supporter, I mean, there weren't no bright spots for Arsenal. You know, in the first half, I felt Pepe looked dangerous when he got within, you know, 20 yards of goal.
Yeah, there were some interesting bits, wasn't there? That, you know, him moving into central areas, there were a couple of shots. One, I think, was blocked, and one maybe the keeper saved relatively easily. But it was promising in the sense that there's a player on the edge of the box getting on the end of a ball and having a shot for Arsenal, which is something that's been in short supply. Mm-hmm. I don't think he played brilliantly, but I liked that, you know, we were getting somebody into those positions.
Yeah, he does get into good positions, particularly when he's playing from the right. He does that thing where he kind of drops off and hangs out nearer the penalty spot, you know, and for a pullback from the left-hand side. And there was one, Ceballos played a really nice little pass into him and the shot was blocked. Mm. Funnily enough, look, I don't think Eddie Nketiah had a great game, but I even quite liked that opportunity where he just went through on the left-hand side and just thought, I'm just going to have a shot. And it was a really tame, not very good shot. But I was like, at least there's a kind of directness to that that's been really absent. You know, a shot on target for an Arsenal player at the moment is something to be celebrated. So those were the sort of encouraging things. I can't let the first half pass, however, without...
Oh, I know what you're going to say here.
without passing comment on the Danny Ceballos incident, which for me... I don't know if it's just the way I'm feeling about this team generally at the moment, but I found that absolutely infuriating, and I suspect you did as well.
I definitely did, and it was only when I looked at the video again this morning and I was rewatching the incident and I was rewatching the passage of play that I realized just what a fucking idiot he was to do what he did there, you know, because if he'd stayed on his feet... you know, he had turned the guy and probably could have kept the ball under control. If he'd looked up, he'd have seen Ainsley Maitland-Niles arriving at the back post, completely unmarked, for what I'm sure would have been a beautifully soft Panenka finish into the bottom corner to make it 1-1 before halftime. And look, when you score a goal can be significant in a match, and I think it would have, you know, done us a lot of good. So, you know, he tried to buy a penalty. It was stupid. I guess he was kind of lucky he didn't get booked. If the referee deemed it, you know, if not a foul, then it's got to be some kind of simulation. So he just waved play on. Yeah, silly. Really silly. It was very annoying. Very annoying.
What do you make of Ceballos? You know, we're almost a season and a half into his time as an Arsenal player. I hold my hands up. He's a guy I can't quite work out.
I think I've gone full circle with him in right, that okay. I thought he was pretty ineffective. And then during that period in the summer where, you know, after lockdown, we had a good run of results, and obviously he contributed to the FA Cup win. You know, he scored against Sheffield United. The partnership between himself and Xhaka was functional, you know, in midfield during that period. I was sort of warm to him, and I was glad that we brought him back. But the more I look at him, the more I think, you know what, I'd really like him to be on my five-a-side team. But not in my 11-a-side team, because I just don't think there's enough there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Mm. I think he is a talented player. Mm. I basically think that you know, he's a decent, if Xhaka were to leave, for example, you know, and Ceballos would kind of come into his spot as an alternative, I don't have a huge issue with it. But my qualm with him is just the consistent application of his talent. You know, he's a very gifted footballer, but I feel like the consistency is a real issue for him.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the more this season goes on, the more it becomes really clear that, surprise, surprise, midfield is a real problem for this team. Like, I don't know, you know, this isn't to make any excuses for anybody, Mikel Arteta or anybody, but I don't know how you can play competitive top-level football without top-level midfield players. You know, is it a coincidence that Mohamed Elneny's best game for us in a billion years came when he played alongside the one really top-quality midfielder that we have? And, you know, again, I'm not saying we should be 15th. I'm not saying that these players aren't capable of better than this, but I just mean, in general, we've got one midfielder and he's knackered.
Yeah, that's a great point as well about Elneny. He's a classic sidekick, isn't he? And I think he kind of plays to the level of what's around him to an extent.
Yeah.
And last night, it wasn't a great level for him. Mm. Listen, I do feel a bit for Arteta and Edu in that they went and bought a top-class midfielder and he's barely played for us. But almost when he does, it kind of exposes some of the other deficiencies in the midfield all the more. You know, you notice the absence of players like that when he does play. So it's still a massive issue for this
Would
team.
You... because we're going to get onto him, and I think he was, you know, the bright spot of our night.
Mm.
I know it's a lot of responsibility to put on him, but would you think about using Bukayo Saka in a midfield role?
I would. I mean, I think that when things work well in this system, you know, he does get into those areas. But I think if I was going to play more like a 4-3-3, he would definitely be in my three. And I really like... I know, listen, he creates a great goal with a piece of play from the wide area yesterday, and he can be really, really dangerous. In the first half, there was that great moment where he sort of got to the byline and just played a really emphatic cross, which was cut out at the near post. But I thought, just a bit of power behind something immediately creates threat. But I do like him in central areas, so I would be tempted by that, would you?
I think I would in a 4-3-3 for sure, because you know, he's got the talent, he's got the ability, he's got the bravery, he takes responsibility. You know, I think there was something for Danny Ceballos to learn from the way Bukayo Saka played and his contribution to that Arsenal goal. You know, Southampton from the start, and like a lot of teams of late, kind of get stuck into him physically. I mean, how much was your heart in your mouth early on when he went down holding his knee? I was like, oh, fuck.
Big.
Like, this is, yeah. Like everyone, I'm sure everyone listening to this, we were all like, oh, no, please. You know, but it tells you something about the way the opposition treat Bukayo Saka. Tells you something about him as a player. And he stayed on his feet. Southampton tried to clatter him a couple of times. He played a ball inside. Very nice little flick from Eddie. We got to give him credit for that as well. And Aubameyang in front of goal, you know, where you want him, and maybe the first time we've really seen him there in a long time, stuck it away. So, you know, if we're looking for positives from this one, you know, that little passage of play, what Saka demonstrates, what he brings to the team, along with Aubameyang breaking that goal drought, very positive.
Yeah, and from Saka, I mean, I must say, when he went down under that challenge early on, I was really worried. And I think this might just be trauma in me as an Arsenal fan, but I do have that kind of Jack Wilshere-y fear, you know, of this guy. He's got a playing style that means he gets fouled, you know, because he's a dribbler. He seems to be much more physically robust than Jack at this stage, and that is a huge relief. But I hope he gets proper protection from referees, and I hope we improve in such a way that we can protect him a little bit more and maybe not play him every single minute as he currently has to seem to.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, he has to, because there aren't enough players performing, and there aren't enough players playing with the kind of character you need to get you through a period like this.
Well, he got his manager out of a hole last night. I mean, imagine the position Mikel Arteta might have been had Arsenal not got anything from that game. And he showed such force of personality, I think, to go on that run that created that first goal, and athleticism, you know, strength to resist the challenges, intelligence to keep his head at the end of the run and play the right pass. And you're right, it's not something we associate with Eddie Nketiah, that nice little touch, but it was a good one. And turns out Aubameyang remembers at least how to do that. When he's in that position, he can put it in the bottom corner. And it felt almost surreal to see Arsenal score a goal from open play, and a good goal too.
Yeah, very good goal. You know, so it shows that we do still have it somewhere deep within us, deep within our DNA. Jurassic Arsenal, someone just extract the DNA from the amber and inject it back into us. you know, it was a good goal. It was a good goal. However, a problem that this team has had of late is discipline and ill-discipline to varying degrees. I think it's fair to say. You know, Ceballos, who we talked about early on, he picked up a yellow card that he didn't need to pick up. You know, a show of dissent. I think he punched the ball into the ground after, I think, handball was given against Saka.
Yeah.
You know, we've had red cards. Don't be stupid. Don't give the referee the opportunity to cause us problems. Gabriel, I'm not 100% sure, and I can't say for certain that the referee wasn't going to book him anyway, but he definitely reacted to Gabriel kicking the ball away when he made that foul.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a yellow card that he could possibly have avoided.
It didn't do him any favours.
No, it didn't do him any favours. The second one, I mean, it's a bit soft, and you do wonder if a referee could potentially have given a player the benefit of the doubt there, you know, just have a word. But such is the perception of us at this moment in time. I just felt there was no other way that was going to go down. I mean, I think I said after his first booking in the live blog, I said, I'm a bit worried about Gabriel because I don't think the referee is going to give him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to his next foul, whether it was a scything tackle through the back of somebody or something relatively innocuous like the one on Walcott. So I don't want to go to town on Gabriel, but it is a situation in which I think he just had to be a little more careful.
Yeah, do you remember Old Trafford? Gabriel got booked.
Mm.
And something we're learning about him is that at the moment he doesn't really adapt his style of play at all when he gets booked. He was arguably a little bit fortunate to stay on the pitch at Old Trafford. There was an incident where he could have received a second booking and he didn't. Mm. And in some ways, that's something to be celebrated. You know, this is a guy who plays without fear and he's as committed physically when he's on a yellow card as when he's not. However, maybe that's something that as he gets older, as he gains experience, he might start to adjust a little bit more and learn that, you know, it's not the most sensible thing to do. I mean, I'd say the second booking he gets, probably 8 times out of 10, you do see a yellow card for that. It's just one of those sendings off where cumulatively you look at it and you go, it's a lot, isn't it? To be sent off for those two incidents, it feels like a slightly harsh punishment. But
slightly, but, you know, it was 2 yellow cards in 3 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, another thing that we have to look at, which isn't to make excuses for Gabriel, is that this was just a simple ball downfield into the centre circle from the goalkeeper, where if Walcott had turned Gabriel and got away from him or been allowed to get away from him, then they were in a 3-on-2 situation.
Well, that's, exactly.
Which is, you know, again, it comes back to midfield for me. You know, the two guys, I think Ceballos and Elneny, were trying to press up the other end of the pitch, and there was no protection whatsoever in the centre of the park. So all the keeper had to do was just play not even a long punt. It was just one of those where you clip the ball from your goal, from your penalty area into midfield, into the feet of a striker who turned, yellow card. I mean, it's just, that would drive anyone mad.
Yeah. Southampton, I think, probably watched Spurs play Arsenal and saw, you know, they could get the ball into Harry Kane and he was comfortable to hold it up and lay runners in behind. So they did the same thing with Adams and Walcott running off him. And Arsenal, I think when people do that to us, it panics us a bit. And it's interesting, you know, all these red cards. I mean, on Monday we spoke about it and I said, is it an unhappy camp? And having thought about it more, I think it also just speaks to sort of a bit of desperation. I mean, if you wanted to make the case the players are still playing for this manager, you'd say they're almost too eager, you know. They're making mistakes born out of, I can't think of another word other than desperation, really. And a huge blow to Mikel Arteta, because who knows what happens if this game stays at 11 versus 11.
I didn't necessarily have the same sense or the same frustration with this one as I did with the Burnley game, in which I feel like we really had a good chance of going on to win that game if we kept it 11 versus 11. You know, I think we have to recognize that while we did score a good goal, and again, we had a bright start to the second half, in the overall context of the game, Southampton were superior.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So
for
it,
sure.
It doesn't feel to me quite the same as Burnley, where I look at that game and think, well, that should have been 3 points because, you know, we were on top and we were, you know, we should have scored the goal/goals to win that game if we'd had 11 players on the pitch. I mean, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, and there's a degree to which, I mean, you know, we're all delighted that they managed to get a point at least. But there's a degree to which it suits us. Like when we had a man sent off at Leeds, don't know if you remember, but that was kind of an end-to-end encounter where it looked like they might score every time they went forward. Pepe got sent off and actually sitting in improved us to an extent. We were at least comfortable with the sort of consolation of we just have to defend what we have. And I think there was an element of that in this game. Had it remained 11 aside, had there been more onus on us to go forward, I wonder if the same gaps might have appeared at the back.
Yeah, I mean, you referenced some Bernd Leno quotes. I mean, what were those or what did you take from those?
Yeah, let me find them now. Sorry. I found them. Here you go. The coach is the least reason for us being in this situation. If you look at how we sometimes walked around on the pitch, the only fault lies with the players. I have to say that honestly. We get red cards, make mistakes, are disorganised. These are things that we have addressed 1,000 times. In the end, that's a lack of focus among the players.
Yeah.
It's pretty strong stuff. I mean, to be honest, from a goalkeeper, it feels like he's having a go at the guys in front of him, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. And you know, I don't know quite where to stand on that, where I like the idea that players are taking responsibility or they're sort of abdicating responsibility from the coach, because if you're disorganized, is that not his very job, you know, to make that happen? What did you make of the final period of the game? Because, you know, for me, when we were reduced to 10 men, we obviously had to take Ceballos off because Arteta couldn't trust his player to not do something daft. He had to take a guy with a yellow card off and put a guy without a yellow card on. So Joe Willock came on and, you know, his qualities aren't necessarily ball retention. Let's put it like that. And that's not to be critical of Joe, but that's not the game that he plays. He's a runner. He's somebody who arrives in the box. You know, that he's not the guy who's going to put his foot on the ball and help you keep possession. But the way we played, I felt we didn't really have any choice. This is a team absolutely broken in terms of confidence and form, on the verge of creating the kind of record that no player, regardless of you know, how much they care or they don't care, and we can speculate about that until the cows come home, they do not want to be part of a record which says Arsenal lost a fifth successive home game for the first time in its history, you know? Mm. So it was really about digging in, sitting off, staying compact, trying to defend. I know there was the Nathan Redmond chance, but there wasn't a great deal for us to be concerned about. It wasn't like Leeds where they hit the post three times in the last whatever amount of time it was. So, you know, I felt like it wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice to look at. It really does say something about where we are and who we are at this moment in time, that we played that way against Southampton, even with 10 men. But in the circumstances, what else could we do?
Yeah, and I think something Arteta has been maybe guilty of has been chasing wins. You know, I think, for example, he went into the North London derby trying to win when he really probably should have just come and been happy to take a point. And I think something that they have talked about since the Burnley game internally, from what I hear, is just the importance of not losing. And I think this was a game that Arteta couldn't afford to lose. I think the team could not afford to lose. And, you know, they managed to do that. I think Southampton will have regrets, actually. I mean, there was the Redmond chance you mentioned, but there was another occasion where Gineppo got in left-hand side.
Actually, yeah, I've blocked off a few of those scary moments.
Yeah, there were a couple of those, and I think one with Walker Peters, where I thought they should have made more of it. Given also, I mean, I'm saying that knowing our vulnerability, do you know what I mean? Knowing how fragile our confidence is, and that we were never really going to pose a threat going forward, with the obvious late example from the set piece being the exception. I'm not surprised, shall we say, that Arsenal didn't go and try to win it with 10 men. I would love to believe we have that in our locker at the moment. The truth is that we don't.
No, I mean, that would have been the height of stupidity. If we got, you know, pushed X amount of men forward and then got caught on the break, nobody would be sitting here this morning saying, well, you know, at least we gave it a go. It was good try, lads. Well done. You'd just be saying, that was so fucking stupid. What were you doing? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't like that we are where we are, and I don't like that we have to play this way. You know, I think I was talking to Elliot from the Arsenal Vision podcast last night on WhatsApp, and I was just saying, remember when we would go down to 10 men under Wenger, and, you know, the amount of times we actually had more of the ball and more control of the game and looked more dangerous sometimes with 10 men, but that's who we were. That's, you know, you might as well pine for the Invincibles as pine for that stuff, given the difference between, you know, those players and that character and that mentality, and that sort of aura that we had, where even if we did go down to 10 men, teams were still like, whoa, we're still not going to be easy. Whereas now, I think, you know, that's all flipped the other way. So that is where we are, and it is what we are. And that's, I think, what we have to kind of come to terms with if we're ever going to put it right.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually listened to Elliot on their instant reaction pod last night, and I think he was gutted about this performance. You know, I think he really hated that Arsenal had to be kind of so inhibited at 10 men. And it's interesting. I think inevitably people have different emotional responses to games. I saw a lot of people last night were just incredibly relieved that we'd finally got a point. You know, some saw real green shoots there. I had that reaction where, on the one hand, I was relieved, but my relief also told me a lot about where we are right now.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of a reality check that stopping the rot with a draw, a point at home for the first time in 5 home matches, you know, our level, our standards are pretty low right now.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. Do we, very finally, take any comfort from the point? Does it give us something to build on? I mean, are we looking at things through extremely rose-tinted glasses if we think, well, you know, we're going to Goodison on the back of, if not a win, a not loss? You know, is it something to build on? I mean, obviously it's better than going to Goodison having been beaten, but I don't know that it answers too many questions.
Do you know what? I think I derive more confidence from the goal than I do from the point.
Okay.
As good as Southampton are, you know, and they're playing very, very well this season. I think they went top, didn't they, temporarily, when they beat us last night. You know, I think that still a point, I can't get too excited about it. But the fact that we scored from open play, you know, we spoke about kind of that sense of players' movement being off. They're not quite anticipating things. Mm. There's none of that synchronicity or, you know, synapses crackling between players. I just wonder if that bit of imagination, that bit of individual brilliance might be something that restores a bit of life to this team. I'm not confident going to Everton at all. They had a good result. Was it last night or the night before? I forget. But they had a good result.
Yeah.
Well, how about you?
There's a really foolish part of my brain, or my heart, actually, which says, yeah, scored a good goal. We've you know, at least put the brakes on a little bit. Maybe. But, you know, over the last few weeks, I've sort of gone into every game with this wild hope that somehow Arsenal will just become Arsenal again, or the Arsenal I want us to be. Yeah. And every passing game, I'm becoming more resigned to the Arsenal that we are. So, look, I hope we can do it, but I'm not particularly confident either. So
11 men would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be. I mean, I think that's crucial. That really is crucial. You know, it's not the only problem that we've had, but it does exacerbate the problems that we're enduring.
And just looking ahead, you know, I mean, it does mean, of course, we go to Goodison Park without Gabrielle,
yeah.
which will present its own challenges.
Well, David Luiz in, and then, you know, look, the next week is going to be crazy because we've got Man City on Tuesday, then we've got Chelsea next Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, yep, it's all there. It's all there. Plenty for us to talk about. We'll talk about it on Monday, obviously, James, on the Arsecast Extra. But for now, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Thank you very much to James. If you're an Athletic subscriber, you can find a really good piece that he wrote along with David Ornstein today, trying to track and look at the decline of Arsenal over the last number of years. Obviously, this season it is very acute and very marked, but I think a broader look at how we've got here is quite important, and that is something that we will try and do on tomorrow's Arsecast. So please join us for that. Thank you very much indeed for subscribing. Thanks for being here. Because this is sort of like an ad hoc bonus Arsecast, an extra Arsecast, as I said, there is no end bit on this one, but hope you enjoyed the show all the same. We'll have another podcast for you tomorrow. We'll have a preview podcast for the Everton game on Patreon, exclusively for our Patreon members, patreon.com/arseblog, if you'd like to sign up. So until we get all that in your ears, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.